Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran, and we've got an interesting development this morning. Rob pinged me just about 15 minutes before we're ready to start here, and he says, "Hey, Todd, my power's out." So Rob is connecting this morning to the show via, you said via phone, via iPad. How's that working, Rob, exactly?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I'm doing like a share of my internet connection on my Lumia 1020 that's sharing to my iPad. So I've got kind of a jerry rig set up here, and obviously you can see or not see my video. So it's fun times in Seattle this morning. We had a big windstorm blow through, and it just, I guess it knocked us out of the ballpark, as they say.
Well, Rob, it's actually, you know, it's probably a good day for you to be not up on video, because we got this lovely Callie Lewis with us this morning. So she's making up for everything that you would have degraded from the video. Oh. Rob.
I still want him on video. Come on.
Total destiny going on here, right? It's like Callie needs to dominate the video side. Yeah.
That's right.
So, you know, I've known you both for so long. It's good to have you kind of both in one video call.
Well, I'm glad that you are from your now dried out studio in Dallas, correct?
Yeah, we had a flood a while back ago, kind of ruined everything we were working on. So we had to evacuate the whole building. And then as soon as they cleaned it up and got everything fixed and dry, we had to bring everything back. So it kind of puts a wrench in your plans as you're moving forward. But we're back up and running at least.
Well, that's good. You know, when I heard about your guys' disaster there, I know what it takes to wire everything up, and you're just like, oh, man.
You know, I'm very thankful for the fact that we have a full team here, and Ken Tran, K-I-E-N Tran, he's our engineer, and he makes all those wires go smoothly, and he plugs everything in and makes things work and creates a whole devices that don't exist in the world that we have one of a kind here. So, you know, he's just a brilliant mind, and he kind of took that head on and unplugged everything, packed it back all in, and made it work quickly and easily without complaint. So he's a lifesaver for sure.
Well, that's good. You know, it's kind of an aside, kind of a dumb anecdote, but I lived in Guam for a number of years, and in Guam, we always got typhoons on a regular basis, and so everyone had a closet full of coffee cans, and people look at me like, "What do you mean coffee cans?" I says, because when the typhoon was coming, what we would do is we'd lift all the furniture up and stick underneath coffee cans, so you would get at least that much that the water would just flow through, and then when the typhoon was over, you just take coffee cans back down, and you're good, and none of your furniture was ruined. But it's kind of hard to outfit
That's
the. Yeah, but you think about it, just gets it up just enough, you know, to. So anyway, that's enough talking about typhoons and floods.
Yeah, we totally went on a tangent there.
So, Callie, I know you just got back from the UK. I saw you guys had tweeted some stuff. So what's happening over there at the studios? And I guess, you know, what's new with you guys?
Well, so we were just in London. We were over there keynoting a conference called The Future of Web Apps. You might have heard of it. It's kind of a big deal. And the kind of developers over there, entrepreneurs. And so we were doing the keynote there and stuck around for a few days to shoot some content. One of my favorite people of all time that I've ever met is Steve Thompson, who lives over there. We met him here in the U.S., and he told me about his laser harp, which I had never even heard of. Apparently people... some people have heard of them, but there aren't very many in the world. So we got to film that in action, and just really geeky, cool thing right there. And then we are going to be also keynoting a conference here in Boston in the U.S. Called the Ultimate Developers Event. And so we're going to kind of be doing somewhat of a similar speech all about the future of technology and how the connected world that we live in, what that will look like in 10 years, in a decade. So having fun with that. And we're just kind of heading into the holiday season here at Geek Beat. So that is always a crazy busy time. So much stuff coming out from PR agencies and companies and Kickstarter projects. And also trying to make sure that people have gift guides so that they know what to buy their geeky loved ones. So, but it's a fun time, you know?
Yeah, you know, I tell my audience really starting like November 1st through like January 15th to me is like, it's hell. Because it's really the most busy time and prepping for CES and everything, you know, all those events that happen and all that stuff that goes on, plus the holidays, it gets pretty ugly. But
it does.
Yeah, it's crazy, but that's what we do. And but Rob, you know, you're sitting here listening in. Sorry, I've been hogging the mic here. Go ahead, Rob.
Oh, I just think that both of you guys love doing this stuff, so I can't imagine it's hell for the next 2 months. But no, I definitely think that this time of the year is really, really exciting too. I mean, it's a fun time to see all the new
best sense of the word.
Yeah. I mean, it's exciting to see all the new gadgets come out and see how technology is progressing or not. I think in some ways it is, and in some ways it's maybe a little bit on the boring side right now too. But I think we're at the cusp of something big too. I think as you look out into like this next year, I think there's going to be this upsurge in wearable devices, and I'm not quite sure how that's going to have an impact on kind of new media and content creation, but there could be a bunch of new things coming that could kind of transform the creation and the consumption side. So I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, wearable devices are kind of a huge thing right now. And we're seeing it in such the beginning stages that it's kind of ridiculous when you think about what it will be in the future. Like right now, it's toys, you know? I mean, even Google Glass, which is out there and kind of further along than most things, it's still kind of a toy. I hate to say it because everyone loves it, but when we think about the future and content creation, like you were talking about, the fact that we can have all this stuff on us, our clothing and our fabric can be connected to the internet. Not that we're seeing that right now, and we won't see that here at CES in any major way, but that is kind of the future. And if you think about Vine, which happened earlier this year or late last year, and the way that people stopped creating longer format, you know, and kind of are focusing in on those really short form, you almost say nothing kind of 6 second clips, 15 second clips. Those things kind of combined, I think you can kind of get a picture of what content creation might be like in the future. Unfortunately, I mean, I hate to say it because I put so much work and so much effort into the things that we do here at Geek Beat that it's kind of sad to think about.
Hey, just as a programming note, we've got a little bit of a sync issue today. Skype's running a few frames behind, and the video's running a few frames behind, so it's obviously some people are seeing some lip sync issues. So, you know, technology is at its best, really. So it never fails. There's always something, right?
So yeah, sorry about that. I'm on Ethernet, so I'm not sure what's happening.
Yeah, me neither. And you know, sometimes it just happens. I don't know why stuff gets out of whack, but not a lot you can do about it. You know, the whole technology thing, and I've got Google Glass back here charging, and I've been using it on and off from time to time. And, you know, when they're announcing that we're going to let us give away three pairs to basically to anyone I want. And, you know, I put the call out on my show, and it was like immediately I got inundated with, you know, 50 people that are willing to go out and spend $1,500 for these things. And I haven't been very nice to Google Glass, you know, because it's really at this point in its implementation, a limited application. And, you know, some of the things that has come out this year, I've had some challenges with, you know, like I got the Pebble, and the Pebble works great so long as I'm not in my car. And when I'm in my car, it connects with Bluetooth. It's weird and it doesn't work real well. So, you know, I think a lot of this stuff has a long ways to go from a, you know, you can't expect a lot in version one of any type of gadget, but we'll see what happens with this new improved version of Google Glass. And then, you know, all these watches and everything are coming out. What do you think the theme is going to be, you know, going into the new year? What's going to be the gadget of the year? You know, is it going to be a watch or more wearable gear? Where do you think it goes, Callie? Do you think it's going to be an Apple TV? You know, what's going to be what do you think is going to be the hot thing?
I think medical devices are going to really come out this year. We're seeing the beginning of them. The medical space combined with wearable devices, I think this year is going to prove to be a big win for that space.
Yeah, I think what we saw last year was that from the year before to 2013, there was like, I would say, a quadrupling or maybe five times as many, you know, different vendors that we were actually looking at. And I think you're right. I think the health stuff is going to explode, not just at CES, but everywhere. We're already seeing that in different types of devices. But, you know, I think it's good because, you know, the boomers are going to be spending a lot of money in the health space. So, you know, it's a prime time for all that gear and being connected to it all. But it's also a little unnerving how much privacy data we're going to be shoving out, making public and sending to our doctors, too, is a little bit unnerving.
Yeah, one of the things I'm really looking forward to in the future is having the ability to not have to go to the doctor themselves, to be able to just send information through whatever I'm wearing on my person, let my doctor see that in real time, let me monitor that in real time, and if something's wrong, we know immediately, as opposed to waiting hours in the doctor's office and going through that whole process. It will change the entire medical field as we know it, but you're right, privacy is a huge issue, and the interesting thing about how technology works is that you and I, we're all like kind of really into it and we see everything in its beginning stages. But if you think about the consumer world and the people who aren't seeing every single piece of new technology as it comes out, it does kind of flow easily. And so when things happen, we're kind of more aware of it than most people are. And so you kind of, as a consumer, you let go of your privacy in major ways without even realizing it. So that's going to be a huge thing. And we have to kind of take a step back as a whole and think about what we're giving up and whether we really want to. But I'm afraid that, you know, that's not really something that's going to happen. We're just going to go over the edge without knowing it. And what happens, happens, you know. It's kind of a grim reality for that space.
Well, just those of you that have joined us a little bit later, just let you know that Rob is in Seattle. Rob has had a power failure this morning, so he's connecting via iPad through an internet connection on his phone. So, Rob, I think that's the first time I've heard you admit that you actually have an iPad. So,
well, you know, it's an iPad 2, which is still being sold by Apple, so I guess it's still a considered current device, right?
Yeah, I guess so. And you can still get it upgraded. So let's, you know, we could spend all morning talking about technology, but I really want to kind of do, Callie, is kind of dig into what you guys are doing there at Geekbeat as a company, and you know, where your growth has happened and where you think your space is going, and you know, beyond the flood and the recovery of that. You know, let's just, you know, go back to the beginning when you guys established the studio there to where you are today. Can you kind of give us a little chronologue and some of the challenges that you face? And really, I kind of want to dig in, and if you can share as much as you can without going into giving up trade secrets, I'd love to hear what you guys, you know, you guys' methodology and thought process and all that.
Yeah, so we're kind of, I don't say this to sound too confident or sure. anything like that, but we're kind of different when it comes to the new media space. A lot of people are having a lot of success and doing a lot of great things from a bedroom in a house, and which is what we used to do. It's what I used to do back on Geek Brief, the show that we that started off the career for me, and it's how we started Geek Beat. But we very quickly, when I teamed up with John P, one of the reasons was I don't want to be, you know, a couple man show. I don't want to just sit here and only do the one thing that I do and do it well. I want to do more. I want to do it all well, and I want to expand, and I want to be able to have a sick day. So, you know, if, and so what our goal from the outset was to kind of expand what we were doing and not only have a team in place to help with everything that we're doing, and now we do. We have about 8 full-timers and a lot more bloggers around the world who volunteer their time to help us out on the website itself. And so, you know, we have an engineer, we have our head producer, we have a couple of other editors that we can call on. We have our social, our editor-in-chief, and he also is kind of our head of social media. So he manages all of that stuff. And, you know, having all of these people in place to be able to support everything that we're doing is a big win for where I've come from and, you know, to this spot here in the present. So that's kind of been a great thing about what had happened with teaming up with John P. And in addition, we don't just do the shows that you see on GeekBeat. So we have the Daily Show, and that comes, actually, it's not really daily, but it comes out 3 days a week. And then we have our weekly live show, and that is once a week on Fridays. And then in addition to the shows that we put out for people to watch, we also do some stuff on the side, like we'll produce videos for companies who we have a good relationship with. If they, you know, people like Verizon and Radio Shack, they come to us because we have a good relationship with them in the first place. And if they need some help getting stuff out to their audience, we'll help them with that. And so that helps our revenue model. And then we do a lot of things like presentations, speeches. At CES for the last couple of years, I've been the primary spokesperson for Panasonic. And, you know, these different things that is another stream of revenue for us. So it's not, it's something that we've been able to kind of do differently than other people in new media, which I'm really proud of. I have a hard time saying that, but I am. And so that's kind of where we've been. And that's a challenge because to get to that place, because a lot of, because it is new, it is all new for all of us. And I think the most important thing that we can all do is push the boundaries. And that's what I'm constantly trying to do here, is push boundaries of what has been done in the past and what can be done and test new waters.
You know, one thing, go ahead, Rob, I hear you want to get in there.
Yeah, I was just wondering, so how are you balancing the need to put out content into YouTube versus putting out content, you know, into the podcasting area? And is that really much of a, you know, a key decision-making area for you guys?
Because of our history, is a very good question, Rob. Our primary audience is on RSS, whether that's iTunes, TiVo, Roku, or Zune. We still have people who watch there. And that is the majority of our audience. YouTube is kind of a struggle for a lot of podcasters. I used to think that as, you know, as YouTube was coming along, that we'd all share in the happiness and fun together. That's not really the case.
Yeah.
I see you, Todd, shaking, you know, nodding your head. And I think we all kind of feel as podcasters that it's us against the YouTubers. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah, and, it does. Yeah.
Go ahead.
But, you know, we've had this discussion on this show. You know, anybody that's been here, it probably comes up every other show. We just don't understand why. Our challenge, you know, that if anybody can ever come up with that universal answer, we're all going to do very well from it financially, because same with me. You know, my show is consumed, you know, 99.90% is consumed RSS and all those other platforms that you mentioned. And then YouTube is just like this sliver, you know, and it's just, to me, it's like, if I had to rely on YouTube, I'd have to go get a job.
I know. And it's sad. We always get comments on our YouTube channel, like, why isn't this show being watched more? And, you know, you guys deserve a lot bigger audience. And we do. But the problem is you don't see that on YouTube. And because here's the big problem, I believe. iTunes needs to take a step, and those other platforms, in the direction of what YouTube has succeeded in. And that's being able to quickly embed. Right. YouTube has taken over what we've been able to do on podcasting because you can easily embed it. I share stuff on YouTube every single day because it's easy. You can also, everyone can see stats. And that is a big motivator for not only the content producer, but it's also a big motivator for the audience. They like to see things that other people are watching. So if they see that a video has had 1 million views, they want to watch that. If they see it's had 20 views, they're not that interested. It's just kind of human behavior.
Makes sense.
And then also live aspect, you know, you don't, that's a really important thing about what's happening right here and now. And the audience loves live as long as the content producer is interacting appropriately with that live audience.
Right.
So if you're not bringing your audience in who's watching live and talking to them and bringing in their questions, you're not using it to its fullest extent. And you can't do that with iTunes or any. And I say iTunes, I mean all RSS, but that's kind of the big, you know, the big daddy. So if podcasting, which primarily, you know, is all on RSS, can succeed in those areas, then I think we have a chance at quote unquote competing with YouTubers. And, you know, YouTubers are kind of considered these outrageous videos. Either, you know, like,
well, they're always,
I'm not going to call out names, but you know, these videos that maybe not aren't that don't appear to take a lot of work.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So there's just that balance.
One of the folks in the chat room actually said, I don't know what RSS is. And I think at this point in the game, it's not real important that they do. You know, it's.
But that's a distinguishing factor in how the delivery method is used.
Right.
But no, nobody should have to know what RSS is. But how else do we? You know, how else do people know where they can get content and?
Right.
You know, it's a marketing issue.
It was kind of funny because I, you know, we're in the middle of the podcast awards voting right now, and. You know, we had 4,400 shows that were submitted over there, and we look really pretty much at all of them I do this basically overall state of the podcast union type of thing every year. And what we found was that, and something that's really new, is a lot of the folks that were calling themselves video podcasters only had a presence on YouTube, and yet I couldn't find them on iTunes. I couldn't find them in any of the devices. You know, they weren't out there, but you know, and these were guys that were doing video only. And then another trend I saw was the folks that were doing audio and video, you know, they had their audio basically everywhere, but then their video was an embed on YouTube and you couldn't subscribe to the video to get it. You know, you could go to YouTube or you could go, but it really wasn't in the distribution model that you and I are more familiar with from how we get, you know, everywhere into all these devices. So, you know, that was just something I kind of thought. I said, wow, you know, there's definitely a shift. And also I think part of it too is it may not be because folks don't want to distribute via iTunes their video or these other platforms. It's maybe the money.
I don't think that they think it's important. Here's the thing about that is you're coming into a YouTube show. Like if you're just starting out right now, you think YouTube is where to go.
Right.
And that makes total sense. And so you don't even think about iTunes or you don't know how to distribute right on it. But the most important thing about new media distribution is that you have to be every single place that you can possibly be. So you have to put the effort in to make it into an RSS feed that can get on iTunes if you're a YouTuber and vice versa. Because people these days are going to watch where they want it, when they want it, and how they want it. So exactly, they're not going to follow you over to YouTube if they don't want to watch on YouTube and vice versa, iTunes or other RSS readers. And so you have to be able and willing to be where people are. And I mean, that just is the fact of the matter is that, you know, there's so much competition that you're not that important
right.
for somebody to go through hoops in order to watch you. That's just the way we live now.
I think that's a big point there, Ellie, is that it's so difficult to get noticed now. I know back in the earlier days of podcasts and online kind of media distribution, it was a lot easier to get an audience. And it seems like now that there's just so much content and there's these dominant platforms like YouTube that it is more difficult for a upstart to gain a market, though it's not impossible. It's just that the game has changed, right? The game has gone up. I mean, you really have to be a compelling content provider to build an audience these days. So what's your thought on that? Is there any advice that you would give to new folks that want to get into the space?
I think social plays a big part in it today. You're right. Yeah. You do have to just be extraordinary to get an audience from scratch today. You have to do something either outrageous or completely awesome. And if you're not, then you miss out on so much opportunity. And we all kind of have the advantage of having been, you know, old schoolers. but it's social can really put you out there in a way that just pure going, you know, putting a video on YouTube can't. And so, and the thing is that so, and by that I mean, like, you don't want to just put your videos out on social media. You have to be there. You have to participate. You have to say interesting things that have nothing to do with your content. So, for example, this morning, I posted a picture on Google Plus of, I don't know what it is, a platypus?
I saw it, yeah.
I don't know what the animal is. I think it's a platypus. But it's just a funny, goofy photo of like this platypus thing, whatever it is, smiling, and he looks like completely ridiculous. Well, you know, putting pictures out there like that on Google Plus really works. And because it's a very visual platform. Sharing Vine videos on Twitter seems to work really well. Saying funny things, saying shocking things, saying interesting, thought-provoking things on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, posting interesting pictures on Pinterest. Those things get you an audience ready and willing to listen, and then you can share your content of choice with them. But you have to share a lot of different things to capture that entire audience. Yeah, that thing. I don't know what that is.
You know,
and so I think that's really something that people don't grasp intuitively.
Yeah, you know, and I you know, oftentimes I get drugged down into the stats, and you know, I'm a stats junkie, and you know, I drive Angelo crazy because there's times that I'll say, hey, can we get this out of our data? And you know, I'll send him off on a, you know, doing a MySQL query. And but you know, one thing that we see is there's this huge breadth, and it goes back to what you're saying earlier of people consuming content. I think we're tracking 150 or so platforms and devices that you can consume audio and video media on. I know you guys are largely, you know, a TV, basically not TV, a video entity. You do your you know, obviously, there's a lot of stuff that you guys put into your video production. Obviously, you know, what I've done here in my studio was an attempt to grow the video audience, which has worked out well, but still in the long run, and I don't know what you guys are seeing, but audio is still what's king. I mean, it drives it, you know, 10 to 1 from a, you know, from a listener standpoint. Of course, who wants to watch me for an hour and 15 minutes on my regular tech show? You know, that's, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but people have a lot more time to listen to watch. Do you guys, what do you guys see on that side? And I know you really focus on the video part, but yeah, where does your audio come in?
Yeah, we don't do a whole lot of just pure, well, we don't do any pure audio. Right, everything right. we do is either written on the blog or video.
Right.
And that may be a completely unproduced vlog, or it may be a very well-produced video show.
Right.
And, you know, I have to say, I'm tempted often to throw away all this, not literally, but throw away all this expensive equipment we have and just do something really raw, because that seems to kind of work on the video side. I can't really speak to audio. I do know that a lot of people, you know, listen to shows on their drive, but I think it's all about, again, testing where your audience is going to be,
right.
Putting your stuff out there in every possible format. Now we did, and seeing, sorry, let me complete that thought, and seeing where your audience is going to pick up your stuff, because every show is going to be different. Now we used to produce an audio only version of our show. So we would take the video and then just strip out the audio and publish it. That we stopped doing because it really wasn't that well
right.
used or downloaded. We have had since a lot of people asking for it, but not enough to really go through that extra work.
Yeah, and this, I think, you know, it's also where your roots were at. You know, this show started out purely audio. I did 670 episodes before we ever switched to video, and then you know, the audio audience was a little upset with me. Well, why are you doing audio? You know, and in the end, it's, you know, you try to take your show and see where you want it to go, and you have to experiment a little bit. When you guys are, you know, I know you guys have been there in Dallas and your location, and you know, location. How does Dallas, does it give you a good jumping off point to go to different parts of the country? Do you feel sometimes you should be in the valley? You know, how's your location helped you or hindered you?
One, I love being in Dallas for a couple of reasons. One, it is a lot easier to travel to wherever we need to go because it's right in the middle. Two, primarily, I love it because it gives us a different point of view. We are not in the valley, and we don't focus on the valley topics. And so we set ourselves apart from our quote unquote competition because we're not in the bubble. And I feel like we are able to kind of give a broader overview of technology from a consumer standpoint, because that is who our audience really is. I mean, we have our hardcore geeks, you know, we have a very broad range of audience. We have the hardcore geeks, the IT professionals. We have grandmothers who know nothing about technology. We have kids watching. We have a very highly educated audience, but people who just are looking to have a little bit of fun with this topic and be entertained while learning. So what we hear from our audience on a constant basis is that they love that we're not really covering the same thing that every other person is.
Right.
And so I think that's really helped us.
It makes sense. And I think, too, probably from financial standpoint, back on the business discussion, it's a lot cheaper to rent space in Dallas than it is to rent in anywhere that is basically west of you.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's a lot less expensive to live here. We've done the calculations. John B. has actually done the calculation. And what he found out was that you can live here and we can have this studio here, you know, and you can still travel like 50 weeks a year and go live in California, live like hotel, stay in California like for 50 weeks a year, and still come out on top.
Wow.
So have a place here, go do your hotels, your car rentals, your food out there, and you're still like better off financially. So it's just, I have no desire to pay that much for rental space.
And, you know, I talk to my wife all the time. You know, I live out here in Honolulu. And just, you know, you say Hawaii and you just add $2,500 a month. Just, you know, that's a man. That's just throw that number right on top of anything that you're expending today. Just the cost to live here. And, you know, I've always said we'd love to find somewhere to, you know, move this operation. And we love Hawaii. We don't want to leave. But every time I go look, and if I say, okay, I want to rent let's just say a 20 by 20 space, which is nothing. It's multi-thousands of dollars in a commercial district, you know, and it's crazy how much so being in Texas, man, I think you've got a great location. So it's,
and you know what? We have so many tech companies here. We have so much tech going on, but like I was saying earlier, it's a marketing thing. We don't appear to, from the outside world, have a lot going on here, yet we have the biggest names who have huge headquarters here. And we've done a bad job locally at showcasing that and coming together and being one big, happy, geeky family. So I think that's the problem here. But I just... quick note, I was on the Big Island about a month ago. Loved it. Well, I didn't think I would like it as much as I did.
Well, thank you for bringing your Visa card to Hawaii and spending money. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
I think Texas often gets not a lot of credits because Austin is huge from a kind of a startup standpoint now, and Dallas, mm-hmm. like you said, has got these big companies. Rob, been hogging the mic here. Go ahead. I'm sure you've got lots of great questions for Callie.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask. So you guys are so visual. You know, I know that your show, they've been watching your shows for years. Being a part of kind of the Revision 3 platform and things like that, which is linked up with the Discovery Channel and the Discovery Network. So are you moving more towards TV? I mean, how are you kind of balancing that between making your show available on the TV side of the fence versus the online side? Or are you pushing more towards the online side, or are you pushing more to try and get more of what you're doing on the TV side?
Well, I don't think really our show, the format it is, the daily show, I mean, the short form one.
Sure.
It doesn't really fit well on TV because it's so short, right? But we do actually have our live show is distributed, not via Discovery, but on a cable network here in the States called U2, YOUTOO, and their specialty is really getting the audience involved. They play audience videos throughout the commercial breaks. And so that goes out to 15 million households, and we're their most popular show on the network. And so, yeah, I mean, that was a big win, starting out from online to go to TV. And we changed some things for the format to do that. But one thing that we did not do is stop the gut of why we do a live show, which is the audience. So we still bring the audience into our discussions. And when we pause for commercial break so that we have a cut for the TV side of things, we just sit there and talk to the chat room for 5 minutes. And then we continue on with the show. And so, you know, that we didn't want to change the format for TV in order to just be on TV, because we didn't want to lose the audience and what they we knew that they loved about it. So that was really important for us. And I don't think we'll ever do anything that forgets that. I hope not. but I think just like podcasters and YouTubers have to kind of work together to build things up and create something bigger, you have to work with the TV side of things. TV wants to work with the online side of things. We all have to become able and willing to work together and do things that promote each other in order to move this media thing along that we're doing.
You know, on a daily basis, I get emails now from, you know, really countries and companies all over the world looking for content. There's this, you know, absolute, it's like they're starving, and they're not starving for, there's lots of content. They're starving for good content. And so, you know, I think this is an opportunity for a lot of the content creators to, you know, if you're doing your trade well and you start getting those emails, seize on that, because that can lead to some pretty amazing things. You know, unfortunately, everyone wants stuff for free. You know, they want you, and it's okay if you've got enough of a business model to pay, to support it. But I don't think, you know, a lot of folks have, you know, maybe enough financial support to take it to the next level. Now, when you guys made your kind of your change, and I've actually, Time Warner carries that channel that you guys are on, and it's right up against before like HBO or something, I think at least here in Hawaii it does. How was that transition? Because you have to hit marks. You have to hit those time marks pretty close. Was that, you know, and Rob, you used to doing that because you used to do regular radio. Was that a big issue, or is that just, you just had to shift a little bit to the right and adapt?
Just had to shift a little bit. I don't know about you, Rob, but we had to create a very specific run sheet that we go off of and keep time. So we have to pay attention to our floor director, who's keeping time and making sure that we're cutting off when we need to. And sometimes we go over, and thank goodness we have the ability to kind of edit it a little bit, you know, because it's not going straight to TV. So we deliver it a couple days later. And so for us, that's kind of a lifesaver, because John can talk. But, you know, what you said something just a second ago that reminded me, about distribution and, you know, doing deals and stuff and take it where you can get it. One of the things that we do along those lines is we distribute to a lot of different weird places, like gas stations. Will show some of those gas stations have like the TVs at the pumps.
Right.
You can see Geek Beat there. You can see it in Arby's and Taco Bell and Wendy's and at mechanics shops. And so like while people are waiting on their car, they can watch Geek Beat. And so that's been an interesting thing that we've tested that's worked out pretty well, actually.
Well, that's kind of, it's like they got a company that's specifically, you know, getting content into those venues, because you're sure short enough where, you know, someone might be able to see a full episode or a clip or something. Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm seeing that stuff actually go.
Sorry, Rob.
Yeah, I'm seeing that type of content even going into the elevators too. I mean, I'm seeing it in, you know, the gas pumps, and there's a lot of places where, you know, it's probably going to go in the bathroom here before too much longer.
You're probably right.
So from a, you know, going back to talking just a little bit about the business model, has, you know, I know you guys have got a lot of great relationships with companies and stuff, but, you know, how's the sponsorships of the show? Have you been able to keep your inventory filled, and have you been happy with that progression?
Yeah, so Revision 3 actually takes care of that for us, so that that was a business decision on our part, so that we don't have to have a sales force, and we have the ability to do so, but that's a big undertaking. And so we chose to license our show to Revision 3 so that they can fill those sponsorship spots. And they're doing a great job with it. And that's one model that works out for a lot of people.
That's good. And that way, I think that's beautiful, because you just have to worry about the content. And Revision 3, you know, they have to sell inventory, and you count on them to do that. It's great to have a fantastic partner that you can trust. And boy, it's got to kind of be like aha, let's do what's fun. That's the fun. The fun part's creating the content. The sales stuff sucks.
and we have they license GeekBeat, and then we do a lot of other things on, like, that I talked about before, right, that they don't handle. So we still have a fair bit of that business stuff that we have to take care of. And, you know, that's not necessarily the fun part, but it is necessary. So we have kind of a bit of both worlds going on at the moment. I think a lot of people have been asking me lately about ads, monetizing on YouTube. And that's such a tiny, like, you have to just be a superstar on YouTube in order to make any money there. And we make some money there, but it's a pitiful, you know, it's like just tiny.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing, I think, because I think people are getting a lot more intolerant of ads on YouTube. I don't know if you guys are seeing that.
Well, yeah, I think what it is that, you know, they're being bombarded all the time, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, it's, you know, I go over to a news network, a three-letter news network, and every video, and I want to watch a couple of their segments, and I have to be, you know, inundated with a 30-second ad for a two-minute clip, and then, boom, another 30-second ad for a two-minute clip. And to me, it's completely aggravating. Hit me once and be done with it, but I think there's such a high demand to monitor, because it's expensive. You know, people, and I think people don't realize even though compared to a major studio or something like that, you know, production costs are much lower on the new media side. I mean, ridiculously lower, but there's still cost a certain amount of money. I was talking with negotiating a deal right now for NAB, and, you know, we said, okay, we'll do so many segments. We'll produce this many segments. Here's the cost. And the guy came back with a different number. I'm like, listen, you know, just my production cost alone to produce these videos is that much. And I says, you know, there's, and then everything else is hotels, gas, you know, rental car, you know, and then, you know, so a lot of times people, and even though we're much, much cheaper, there's still expenses involved. And so I think the audience supports the in-show advertising, and that's, you know, where you guys probably do, you know, get the biggest bang for the buck as well. But that pre-roll and that post-roll stuff, I think people hate.
Yeah, they really do. And that the host endorsement side of things really works out so much better for the audience and for the advertiser, that I think we need to really be focusing on that more as a whole.
Yeah.
But that's hard to mass sell as well. It's a very hard thing because it's so personality based. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to somebody like at NAB and you're trying to sell something, one of the failures that I think as a whole, all of us producers can fall into is compromising. Right. So people, advertisers, this is a new thing for them. They don't want to spend money on it because they're still figuring out if there's an actual return for it. So if they're struggling, you know, then we get nervous that we're not going to get it at all. Yep. And so then we might compromise.
Yep.
And I think that's a big, big, big mistake for new media content producers to do. They should just, And I know there are issues and there are, you know, situations that this might not work in. But as a whole, I think if you can stick to your guns and say this really is going to be worth it for you, and you just need to come up with a budget and pay up because this is a real cost, then, you know, we might push ourselves a little further, a little faster. But I think we just want to do it that, you know, that's a mistake. But in addition, I think one thing that people don't think about as producers is that everyone's trying to monetize the show itself. And that's not necessarily going to be the case for everybody. You can't, all of us can't do it.
Yeah,
because the entire world is doing it, right?
Yeah.
So you're not necessarily going to be able to monetize the show itself. But what you can do is put out the great content that you're putting out and then sell your expertise on that, whether it's speaking engagements, going out and getting a job based on the fact that you have an audience and you obviously know what you're talking about.
Right.
You know, those are a couple of things that people don't always think about, but they're roundabout ways to kind of monetize your show.
You know, I had to laugh, Callie, because, you know, just like you guys, we go to CES and, you know, our CES thing has gotten out of control. I think we had 25 people at the show last year. Of course, we've done a broadcast studio 2 years in a row. And, you know, you start throwing those type of bodies at something, stuff gets crazy. But, you know, I was talking with this company, and it's the same type of thing that you're just referring to. I said, okay, here's the cost. And I'm like, well, what am I going to get for it? So, you know, I break out the numbers, right? Okay, X number of views and social media mentions, third-party blog links, PR mentions, vendors using the videos on their websites, on and on and on. And they're like, and to them, they have a hard time, companies still have a hard time. You know, to them, it's how many widgets am I going to sell? And oftentimes you're like, you're going to sell a lot of widgets, but you have to trust us, you know? Yeah. And it can be a challenge, especially when you're asking a company to write a, you know, maybe a five-figure check or maybe even a six. It's, you know, they have to go on faith and they have to go on. And building a reputation like you guys is critical, you know? And if you don't have that reputation, you're not going to get them to write that big check. So I think that's as important as anything.
The thing we have to remember is that we, as show hosts, we have an influence with our audience, right? And no one would think twice about putting Angelina Jolie on a CoverGirl commercial or whatever. I don't know who she endorses or you know, take any celebrity, Hollywood celebrity, and put them on a commercial. Those companies are going to pay for that, and they're not going to think twice about the ROI on that. And so what we have to remember in new media is that old school rules still apply. We're not doing something new. This isn't, I mean, we call it new media, and it's new in a way, but it's really not new in terms of business sense.
True. Someone's asking in the chat room if we're going to do any Q&A, and if you have a question for Callie,
yeah.
New media related or production related, sure. And if it's, you know, if it's not something weird, I'll be happy to ask her as well. So. Do you you have any stalkers, Callie? This is kind of a light moment here, but and run into any issues with that?
Yeah, I've definitely had my issues, some pretty crazy ones. But yeah, we had to hire a security guard at not a security guard, but like a security person for me at one of the events that we threw here, Open Camp, and you know, I've had the FBI involved.
Wow.
And yeah, so it's just, I don't really like to go into the details just because I don't want to encourage that, but
I had a woman come to my hotel room. She talked the guest into, I talked the hotel check-in people to give me my hotel room at 2 o'clock in the morning. Boom. This was about 3 or 4 years. So bringing me a present at 2 o'clock in the morning. You can imagine.
Oh no.
Yeah. You can imagine what that was. So
we all have to face it, right?
Yeah. It's a little odd. Rob,
but you know, I just want to say the thing that I love is I don't deal with it as much as I could, because to be honest, every single viewer is a family member to me. I mean, I love each and every one of them out there. And I try and get to know them as a person, not just a number out there in the audience, you know? And so that's a really important distinguishing factor between the old way of doing things and the new way. Sorry, go ahead, Rob.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about the whole advertising thing. And I know we were talking about that earlier, and it kind of makes me wonder if we're kind of in a change time here on the advertising side, because, you know, lots and lots of people are just fast forwarding through TV commercials now, right? So they're in this mood that they don't have to watch commercials, right? And they've been empowered, right, to fast forward through. And I think that's starting to translate over to places like YouTube and other kind of areas that people can just click to close the ad, or
yeah,
you know, it's this play for 3 seconds and then skip the ad. And I think everybody's doing that. And I think that the whole ad model, I think, is somewhat under threat with the online side. And I wonder how that's going to, I mean, how the content side is going to adapt to that change. As you're saying, Cal, it's very difficult to monetize on a place like, you know, YouTube, and that's what YouTube basically built their business model on, was overlays and banners and stuff like that people hate. I mean,
well, it works out well for them because they are monetizing across millions and millions and billions of views. But it doesn't work out so much for the content producer or the audience.
Yeah, but I would think that over time, though, that would kind of really have a negative kind of impact on the content provider side, right? And that would mean that the YouTube folks would have a more difficult time getting good quality content as you look out over the long run.
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't think that YouTube anytime soon is going to like get rid of that model, because it is kind of an easy way out. And that host endorsement thing is hard. YouTube can't go out and sell host endorsements for the entire YouTube community. You can't mass sell that. But I mean, there are ways around it, but it requires some additional thinking and pushing from kind of the big players to begin that process. So I think I think it's going to be up to the actual content producers to sell either their own host endorsements or get together with somebody who can do that.
Right.
And really push those boundaries. I'm totally blanking on his name. He's awesome on YouTube. Oh gosh, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name.
It'll come to you.
Anyway, but he does videos and he raps and sings, and he got together with Nike and, you know, did a tremendous ad, and he got together with Snoop Dogg and they did like an ad for Hot Pockets. You guys know who I'm talking about?
Nope. Sorry.
Sorry.
I've done videos with him and I can't believe I'm blanking. Anyway, but you know, he's a great example, where you work in the advertisement into the entertaining part of your video. But it just requires a lot more work, and that's just business at its heart. You're going to have to put the work in if you want the rewards.
You know, I think, Callie, you said something though earlier that resonated with me, is, you know, your audience is your family. And I, you know, when this machine isn't using for Skype, it says Ohanasaurus over it. In Hawaii, Ohana means family. So like, you guys are coming in, you're part of the family here. We're having a nice discussion. Same thing when we're doing the show. So I think the reason that host endorsement works so well for our side is that we ask the audience, hey, support the show. Go out and, you know, we like this gadget, we like this product, or we use it. And if you want to support the show, go out and support our sponsors. And I think it's so powerful. It's because it's coming from us talking to our friends and people that we know and that we have a relationship with online. And I'm sure you run into this all the time, too, as you run into people and they really know you, and you have to like kind of get up to speed real quick because you don't fully know them. You maybe they got an email from them or something once before. But, you know, that's part of the beauty of the new media space. It's totally different than the YouTube thing. YouTube thing, I don't think, is where the content creators often have this relationship that you and I would consider we have with our audience. I might be wrong, but, you know, maybe that leads into the question. There was a question in the chat room that asked, you know, where do you think the future of new media is? And maybe you can wrap that up with, go ahead.
That's a big question. Yeah. It's a fair question. I think we obviously will continue to grow. One of the things that we do that seems odd to a lot of people in terms of audience and community building is we have an IRC chat room. That's so 90s, I know. But it's important because it is building the community. We're in there all day, every day, as much as we can be, talking to those people, right? And then on top of that, they have their own community. They take care of themselves. If we don't do a live show, they're having their own show. And they do like a geek beat after hours where they talk about the show and fill a little bit more in on their opinions and talk about it. So there's this whole like multi conversation thing going. And I think that that is a really big piece of the pie in the future is the combo effect. So having not only us talk to you, get to know the audience, they get to know us, but they also have their own community conversations, right? So it's about bringing in everybody into one spot where they can kind of be together. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really fascinating to me that we're still using a 1990s technology to connect people online, you know, and it does kind of beg the question to me of, you know, are we doing the right thing from a technology perspective in the bigger picture of what people really want? I mean, it feels like we're trying to force business models on people that it doesn't really fit with what people want and what their desires are. And we're, you know, I do know that the whole advertising model is built on, you know, getting in the way, right? I mean, that whole concept of breaks in the content. People just want to get to the content, but you have to break in order to deliver an advertising message. But it feels like that we're kind of evolving into something new and something different. And I'm just wondering whether or not, you know, I mean, you guys both think that, is it 5 years out, 10 years out? I mean, are we talking about a completely new kind of digital media platform that will actually cater to people's wishes and desires in consuming content, that will deliver value in advertising somehow in a way that fits with how people like to consume content? And I know that's a huge question, but it just feels like we're still not where we need to be.
I agree. And I think within the next 5 years, there is bound to become a service that combines Twitter and Google Plus communities and IRC chat and, you know, Google Glass type interactive video in order to create this one big community thing. But then there's also the issue of people want to use the services that they want to use. And that is a pretty, you know, you can't get the entire world doing one thing. Right. And that will always be a problem. And so there will always be brokenness from our point of view. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Another question was asked in the chat room. Does YouTube select the ads? Can they just put in an ad from whoever they want, even if they don't want to publicize for them? Go ahead, Callie. I know what the answer is, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, so you can set parameters like, I believe you can say like no alcohol or, you know, no explicit content or something like that. Again, somebody else actually takes care of that on my end, but I believe you can set those kind of parameters, but basically YouTube sells those ads. They fill the content and the inventory, and you don't really have a say so. Like, You can block an ad from never being shown on your platform again, though. That's one little bit of control that you have.
I remember I was doing one show and on a different network, and I was getting, it was some ridiculously bad ad, and there was no way to block it. And that was kind of the time I decided time to move, time to shift, get away from the platform because it wasn't doing me any favors. Yeah. But also those platforms and YouTube as well is under a lot of pressure to monetize. They have stockholders that they have to keep happy, and these startups have to have enough money to stay in business too. So,
we were in this, economy of just start, get an audience and then figure out how to monetize. I think that's starting to change where people are really coming out with a monetization model first and foremost, which you have to do. Like, you cannot expect to stay in business if you don't have any way to monetize. But that can be done in so many different ways, on so many different levels, that you just kind of have to pick your poison and go with it.
You got some of your fan base in here, Callie. DP's here. Nice. Mufdez,
Phil.
Paul's here. So they're all being very active in the chat room.
I tried to log into the chat, into your chat room. I'm watching my IRC chat room and they're just having a hay fit. But I tried to log into yours and I couldn't get quite in. It wouldn't let me in. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know why Geekshed sometimes rejects certain ISPs. I don't know what it is. They're odd.
You know, I've had that issue with another, with like the Twit server. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. That I'll have Ken look into that.
Rob, go ahead.
It's time to upgrade that technology. What do you think?
Well, yeah. You know, we've tried different things, Rob, and you know, tried and true, IRC is pretty easy. You know, they just connect.
Oh, it is.
And,
yeah.
You know, it just seems to be. You know,
Works, right?
It just works.
It just works.
Yeah.
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 That's true.
It's just scary for people who didn't use it way back when. You know.
And it comes with its own challenges too, because you know you have to have moderators if you have a real popular room, so you know to keep the people that come in and try to flood the channel. So there are certain things you have to put in place if you've got a real active, real active chat room. And I do.
In terms of community, like Google Plus communities, I think they're the closest. Bulletin boards are dead.
Yeah.
but they're the closest to replacing that. Outside of IRC, and IRC, I think it's kind of very different, you know, because things on IRC are very live and in the moment. But communities on Google Plus are really close to becoming the new bulletin board.
Well, they are. They are. That's for sure.
Yeah, we have 28,000 members on our Geeks Plus community,
right.
And people are constantly going crazy in there, talking and sharing and getting feedback and helping people with each other with issues and stuff like that. So that's used to be what a bulletin board was, but it has some improvements to be made. But I think that's the closest we're seeing. And so I'm looking forward to seeing those improvements.
You know, it's kind of funny because a bulletin board has had several iterations, you know.
Yeah.
It's back in the day we were dialing into them, then they moved into an online format, and now I think you're right. I think Google Plus has kind of replaced them because it's so visual. You know, you can drop a photo in, drop a link real easy. It's just simple, you know. They made it so that it's easy as tweeting, and that's the important part. People don't want to have to learn complicated commands to put a hyperlink in and all kinds of stupid things. So
I've been paying attention to Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus, obviously, but it's really interesting in this last year to see them copy each other, and all services do it. They take the best and try and integrate it, right? But it's almost like they're going to become the same thing eventually if they keep doing this. So somebody has to take the next level, like every couple months, and do something different and unique. But that's what keeps competition going, I guess.
So from as a, you know, we're always trying to look for the next thing, you know, or trying to think like what can we do that would be cool, that would be out there. Is there anything percolating in the creative mind right now that you're willing to share, that you're thinking something that where you want to go in the next year with Geekbeat or?
There are things, yes. I'm not ready to talk about them, but I can assure you that they're pushing boundaries and testing new waters. So don't know if we'll see, if you guys will see the results of that in the next year, maybe year and a half, but something's coming.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you guys, you know, with the Twitter IPO coming and there's a bunch of money coming into Twitter, do you see them being a big player in online media distribution here in the future?
Yeah, I think they'll continue to be a big player. Like Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, they're all big players. They're all continue to be big players until somebody comes along and does something, maybe like what we were talking about before, that integrates a lot of different things, like the real community aspect of new media, and brings that together. I expect that there will be a new service that can kind of outshine, but it's not going to happen in the next couple of years. It'll take 5 or so years for that to happen, or maybe 4, but yeah, something will come to kind of outshine those people, but they are the big players and they're here to stay for a little while at least.
Yeah, I think the challenge I have with like Facebook is that, you know, my family's on there and my fans are on there, and they kind of all are intermingled. Some of them are on the page, some of them following the personal profile. So, you know, it's really hard sometimes. You know, in Google, it's real. Google Plus, it's real easy because it's really well defined. And there's, yeah. But on Facebook, it's kind of like, okay, I want to say something about this and then talk a little bit about the business at the same side. And it's, you know, I feel I worry about alienating one audience against the other. And, you know, it is kind of that, you know, it's that juggle we all do in the social space. And I really wish I could have like just this platform on my own site. And I don't necessarily want to have to send people over to Facebook, but, you know, you got to go where the masses are.
Yeah, that's what's been so interesting about my journey, specifically in yours, too, which has been at this about the same time. When I first started in 2005, I was a podcaster, and that's all I was. Like, that's how I identified myself. And then I realized this... I can't just keep pushing people out towards iTunes, right, and go watch there and have no feedback on my own property. And so then I created a website and, oh, great. Sorry about that. That was our Halloween content.
That's cool.
And then so we created a website and started housing everything there and started forcing people into that section, right? Or encouraging. And then Twitter came along, or Facebook and Google Plus, and they sort of stole all your eyeballs away from your own property. So I don't really know that I have the answer as to what's going to happen in the future, but it's been kind of this up and down thing with owning your own content and letting that go so that people can be where they want to be. I don't know where that's going to go.
You know, Callie, though, but, you know, you're Callie and the brand and Geek Pete. So you've established it. So it doesn't now, from that standpoint, people know that they can go over to geekbeat.tv. They also know they can get GenRevision 3 and all these other places. But the thing is, you're always you. And if you're on Google Plus, you know, you're carrying your brand with you. What the problem was with on iTunes... there was no brand carryover. You know, your show is just listing. It was just a directory. It's this dumb space that doesn't provide feedback except for what the listeners write about, you know, if they like your show or they hate your show. And it's, you know, a lot of that is, you know, very frustrating for me because it doesn't, that platform is as much of a dominance it has in distribution is, you know, they've really done a poor job from the social aspect. So
they really have. And I've talked to them about that before. I can't remember the last time I went on iTunes and looked at my reviews and ratings. Like, yeah. I don't know what's on there because there's no way for me to talk back to them and, you know, have a conversation, because even if I were to find a way to comment back at them, they're not going to see that comment unless they go back to that page and look it up specific. There's just no conversation aspect to iTunes, and that's what I was talking about before. They really have to fix that.
You know, another thing they got to fix is some of us have network accounts on there, and I go in and look at the network data, and they give us some statistics data, and it's really wrong. We know the numbers are not right, and we've talked to them as well about, hey, you know, are you guys just doing like a web counter? Because, you know, the numbers are not anywhere near what we know they are. So, you know, from that standpoint, you know, there's, you know, if someone could usually use that as an opportunity to be quoting something they shouldn't be quoting. From a sales standpoint, it drives me crazy as well, because we get networks that come in and say, oh, we're doing this, and this is what our iTunes stuff says, and we get them up on the measurement platform. We're like, no, it's not. And so I don't know. I think iTunes has helped us as much as they've hurt us.
You know, I think, Rob, you and I might have talked about this a while back ago, but there used to be a organization, AAA something, or some, I don't remember what they were called, that was working on creating a standards for counting statistics and counting views and listens. And I don't know whatever happened to that. I heard that they were working on stuff, and then they just fell off the face of the earth, as far as I'm concerned. But having a set of standards as to how each platform counts a view or a download is so necessary. And as far as I can tell, everybody's just doing their own thing, and it does create confusion, and it creates hardships for somebody to go out and sell those views when, what are you really looking at? Who knows? You know, you're competing with somebody who is also doing the same thing, and are you going to lie? Are they going to lie? Or, or use the best number that they have? You know, it's just all very confusing, and that has to change.
You know,
I think Todd has really been trying to work on that. I mean, I'm sure he can explain it much better than I, but yeah, I think that, Jay, you were referring to the download association that was tried to be formed like back in 2006, 2007.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
and that kind of fell apart. But Todd has really taken the mantle on that around certification. So Todd, why don't you explain?
You know, I don't want to get into a lot of the details, but I can to a certain extent. You know, we worked with the ADM back. As a matter of fact, Angela was the guy that wrote their initial standard. And, you know, and that was semi-adopted, and then the ADM went away. And, you know, we built our own system in 2005 and have improved it ever since. And, you know, what really came to a head was we've had some major vendors come to us in the past year, and we've done audits, and subsequently people have come up on our platform and use it. You know, we got ESPN that's using our network stats, and QDT, and a variety of other networks that are using those data points. But what we have found really across the board, even on independent content creators, is their numbers are generally wrong from a calculation standpoint. And, you know, there's this big misnomer that they're it's rocket scientists. It's not. It's not complicated. It's essentially on the downloadable media side, anything that's being served from a iTunes feed or from an RSS feed is really easily to be able to be measured, filtered, and everything that goes into making sure that you're not counting, you know, some random web browser. But the long point is, you know, my pitch for the past year to content creators is if you are over-reporting your number, you're doing nothing but hurting yourself, because what it's impacting is, you know, let's say you have an advertising campaign and you have company X that is going to be an advertiser. They know when they spend money on YouTube, or if they spend money on display ads, they kind of know what their standard ROI is. And if you have inflated your number, let's say double, and they were expecting to, it cost them $20 to get a customer, and they all of a sudden it cost them $40. Mm-hmm. They say, oh my God, this is worthless. I don't want to advertise again. And whereas if they'd reported the right number, it had been 20 and it had been in line with their acquisition costs. So, you know, people that are over reporting are killing us. And I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of it.
I just have to point out that this conversation that we're having right now is the whole reason that YouTube is winning.
True. It's true.
Because this is just too much to handle for somebody who wants to just put some videos out there.
That's right. It is, you know, and so, you know, so I guess the people, you know, if you know, and we have a lot of people listening. If you want to talk about statistics, email me. I'll be happy to talk to you offline.
I'm not saying we shouldn't talk about it. I'm just pointing out that this is just, it's just complicated, sad.
But, you know, and the sad part is I've got a dedicated guy, a programmer that every day is, not every day, but every week is looking at the data and say, there's something weird that's happening here. We have to investigate, spend 3-4 hours tracking it down. And all of a sudden you're like, yeah, that needs to get thrown in the trash can because it's not a human. It's something else. And, it's really troublesome. But you know, it's not hard. It just takes time and to be managed. But, I put a post up on our blog, a couple of days ago that basically says, listen, here's how we do it. This is what to expect. And, you know, and don't be over-reporting. It's bad. It's hurting us when you're doing that. And the advertisers, no, but they have no way of, well, some do. Well, we've done some audits for some advertisers. And believe me, if you have an advertiser say, I'm going to audit your numbers, that should send a chill down your spine because they're doing it because they think they're being cheated.
Yeah. Rob?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wait to me. No, just... I think that on the comment that you made about YouTube in relations to stats, the other part of it is, you know, it's so easy for content providers to put content up there. The bandwidth's free. They get all these tools that can track where it's being watched and the counts and all this stuff, and it's just really simple. And that's the big piece that's been missing from podcasting is all those pieces being really easy, and it's really hard to be a podcaster. It's not an easy thing, and I think that's why YouTube has gotten as big as they have, is because most people don't want to get that geeky about it.
But most people on YouTube are making no money.
Yeah, that's the trade-off, right? You have to pay for it one way or the other.
I honestly think, from a percentage standpoint, most podcasters, you have a better chance of making money as a podcaster than you do as a YouTuber, unless you have that multi-million view breakout.
Yeah.
Well, and also a lot of the big YouTube networks are trying to move away from YouTube right now. I know that the recent acquisition of Blip was an example of that. That more of these big media properties want to control the distribution. Just like Callie, you were saying earlier, they want to have their content on their own site and to control the distribution of their content and control the monetization of it. And because like you say, I mean, a lot of people are just not making any money on YouTube.
The CPM sucks.
I mean, it's that those are kind of the revolving issues that we're all facing. And, you know, maybe people aren't making a lot of money on YouTube, but they are getting a lot of attention.
Right, right. And that's important.
That's right.
The attention.
And that's what drives people.
That's right. That's true.
And I think Rob, we shouldn't discount what something Callie said earlier. It is that attention that maybe you don't get paid for the YouTube views, but maybe get you a job, you know, get you that next gig, you know? So, you know, that's the intangible, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think that also applies to podcasting too. I mean, I think putting any content out, if it's blogging or being an audio or video creator can help your career. I mean, that's why I've been able to work in the business that I've been working in, working with online content for as many years as I've had, was because, I did a nationally syndicated radio show for 6 years, which gave me experience that nobody else had. So
we're drawn down here near the end. Callie, there had a couple of questions from the audience, but I did want to ask you a couple of questions. Where are you seeing your biggest growth right now? Are you seeing it on Stitcher? Where are you seeing the numbers kind of surprise you? Is there anything that's it's really kind of, wow, where did that come from?
Really social, I have to say. I mean, because through social, you can see a growth in just general views. By pushing so hard on social, that has helped us tremendously. So I think that's been kind of where we've seen the increase. And it takes some time, you know. I mean, we have social followers who don't really understand yet what we do. Mm-hmm. They might watch a video here. They don't see every single video, so they don't put it together. But through time, and you have to be patient with these things, it does allow you to see the increase.
From the business aspect, do you think you guys are going to be growing, or where do you guys hope to go? Do you see the staff going from where you're at now to 30 people, or is that the dream, or where's the end goal?
I don't necessarily right now need to increase to 30 people on staff team. We do really well at the level that we're at. Like I hinted at earlier, we're kind of working on some stuff that will increase business on several levels, but can't really talk about that right now. But just kind of pushing forward. We might bring a couple more people on in the near future, but eventually I'd like to increase the size of the studio and get some more space and do some more stuff with the sets that we have here and that we could have in the future. So,
yeah, finding talent is easy, but finding good talent is nearly impossible.
It is. I'm totally impressed and 100% infatuated with the team that we have here. They all care about what they do so much, and they're all so good at what they do. Each and every one of them is just spectacular.
Rob,
that's hard to do.
Rob, any closing thoughts for you here as we wind down?
Kelly, I just wanted to ask you for a few years in your past, you actually launched other shows, right? Not just the current one that you're doing. Is there any plans, in the future to get back into creating brand new shows? I'm trying to build like a small network for yourself. I mean, I know, for probably a year or so you had a show with another host and all that kind of stuff. Is that something that you see yourself getting back into again?
Not particularly, not right now. What we've found, mm-hmm. Is, and the last show that we had, she moved on. She wanted to go, she got pregnant. Yep. And she wanted to do a little bit more of her own thing. But it's more important for us through what we've learned over the years to build on what we have as opposed to diversify and split directions, but to diversify within the one direction that we're already going.
That makes, makes sense. Rob, who do we have up for next week?
You know what? I don't have my computer open right now.
Oh, that's right. You're no power. And of course, I don't have, I think it, if I remember correctly, it was someone pretty awesome. So I was,
it always is awesome. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like Callie. Callie's great. And there's just so many great people in this space to talk to. It's just amazing.
Here we go. So we have, a Stephen Beckham from podcast producer at CNET. He'll be on next week. So that'll be another great show. Kelly, I know we've kept you here for an hour and a half. I appreciate you spending some time on your Saturday to talk with us and the audience. If we didn't get all your questions answered, I apologize.
Just
tweet Kelly the question at Kelly Lewis. And if I put your
line, I have to go get my oil changed now. So I've been having way more fun with you than my regular Saturday afternoon activities.
So, Callie, best of luck on everything. And I'm sure we'll run into each other out in Vegas here in a month and a half or so.
Shit's already coming up.
It's crazy. I hope you're starting taking your vitamins now, because that show is like crud central, and I
always get something from it.
So
hey, I have good news to report. The power just came back on.
Oh,
yay!
And then, are you going to be out at New Media Expo as well? Are you going to make a appearance there?
I'm not sure. I don't even know what days those are. I think it's like the couple days beforehand. I'm not sure we're going to be able to make that. Hopefully maybe we can drop in or something. So I love those guys, and they do a fantastic job.
So anyone else? Thanks for being here. Rob, any closing thoughts?
No, it was just great, Kelly, to have you on the show and spend so much time with us. We really appreciate it.
You can reach.
I've had fun. I hope somebody got something out of it somewhere.
And you can reach Rob or I here. It's Todd@newmediashow.com or Rob@newmediashow. Of course, you can reach me on Twitter @geeknews, and Rob is @robgreenlee. And Rob, what about for the podcasters out there?
If you want to get your podcast into the Windows Phone podcast catalog, you can send me an email to podcasts@microsoft.com.
And for everyone else, thanks for being here. We'll see you next week here on the New Media Show. Todd Cochran here from Live as It Can Be in Honolulu. Take care. Aloha.